Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to ScaryCast. This is Dr. John. Good to be with everybody on Tax Day 2018, but not quite yet. We're very fortunate to find out that due to some computer malfunctions at the IRS, we've all got an extra day. Well, if you know my accountant, he says, don't even talk to me until the week after Tax Day. So I'm lucky I don't have to get my extension in after ScaryCast tonight. I can wait and do it tomorrow. But just so that everybody knows, we've got an extra day. Tax Day will not be until tomorrow for electronic filing. So everybody get it in tomorrow if you didn't get it in today, and enjoy this evening and chill out and listen to ScaryCast. So it's great to have our show tonight. Our guest, Jay Seals, is under the weather. He will be back with us another time. A very good friend of mine. And excellent futurist, very knowledgeable on technology and everything. But instead, I've got somebody very, very good. Another buddy of mine, Jack Pierce, is with us. Jack is from Camden, South Carolina, by way of California. Good evening, Jack. How are you doing?
Good evening. I'm doing really good. Good to be on.
Well, great. I was in Camden today. We had a blast going around doing some things to promote the Lizard Man Festival. There's just never enough Lizard Man, is there, Jack?
It's been such an amazing story, especially hearing it third hand and seeing how people get into it. It's one of those cool things where, like, you go somewhere, if you go anywhere in the world, everybody's got some kind of, like, thing. There's, like, something, hey, you have to go do this thing. And I'll tell you, if you have any listeners anywhere outside of the South, I'm sure you do. If you come out here, it's so much fun because everybody's got their own story about it, or a story they've heard from another person, or everybody's got their own theories on it, and it's beautiful. It's such a great a community thing, as well as just a fun thing that a lot of people have lived to see, where children, you know, growing up hearing about it or were listening to it and still have all these great stories about it. So it's just a lot of fun. I love Lizard Man. I'm excited to be at the festival on June 8th and 9th and 10th. So that's going to be great.
That's right. Now you will be there for the entire festival. And that means that you'll be there on Friday when we'll have the talk by Lyle Blackburn, who wrote the book Lizard Man, The True Story of the Monster of Bishopville. He'll be there. Mm-hmm. Matthew Delf and Mountain Empire Cryptid Research Organization will be there. John Dixon,
cool,
a field investigator from MUFON in Tennessee, will be there on the panel, as well as yours truly. I will be there, and we will have a blast. So it'll be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about the paranormal. I mean, what else are you going to talk about at Lizard Man, right?
Sounds good.
It's going to be fun. And then on Saturday, the 9th of June, we will have the Indoor Comic-Con, the Outdoor Street Festival, a chili cook-off, and, of course, paranormal talks all day. And as I told somebody, I think I've told everybody, if you can't find some kind of fun to have with that lineup of activities, then you're dead. But then if you're dead, just come on in as a ghost and we'll hang out with you.
Oh, that's
yes, Jack.
That's
that is the worst. That is the worst joke in history. Almost. So anyway.
It's one of those. It's so bad. It's so bad. It goes into being funny.
Well, let me tell you what I did this past weekend at the Charlotte Comic Con. Of course, Rick Fortenberry and Dave Henson put on an absolutely marvelous Comic Con three times a year. In Charlotte, actually, it was in Concord Mills, up a little bit north of Charlotte. It was great. And every year, since I'm there selling caricatures to folks, I always have to have some kind of a joke that would. So last year, it didn't matter who you were, how you were dressed as a cosplayer, I would look at someone, guy or girl, and I would say, ah, I know who you are. And they'd say, who am I? I said, you are the Green Lantern, but you just don't want anyone to know. Now, everybody laughed at that. They did, because it was such a horrible joke. Well, Jack, are you ready for this year's joke? Are you ready?
Are you debuting it here? Am I getting it firsthand here and now?
No, you're getting it secondhand because I used it all over. And I was so embarrassed
when I did it
the first couple of times, and it became a big deal. I loved it. Okay, so what I would do, there was a guy that came up, there was a fellow that had gotten a caricature. He and his girlfriend had gotten caricatures from us last year. So they just came by to say hello to us in our booth. And then here was the third guy. He said, we're going to get this guy to get a caricature. I said, that's great.
Uh-huh.
I said, let me show you something. So I took my finger and I poked him really hard in the shoulder. And I said, do you know what that mm-hmm. is? He said, no, other than it hurt. I said, that was Pokemon. Okay.
Oh, no.
Now,
oh,
the guy looked at me like I was a space alien. He looked at me the most tasteless thing, and he was mad that I had poked him in the shoulder and it still
hurt. I'm not convinced you're not a space alien, so that's
well, okay, you're probably right. But now, let me tell you what happened about an hour later. An hour uh-huh. later, the guy came back. And he held up a Pokemon card. He said, we're everywhere. And like 20 people came up to me with a Pokemon card on Sunday and said, we're here. And apparently that joke made the rounds of the Charlotte Comic Con. It was apparently the biggest hit for the worst joke. All right? So just know that the next time we're out in Camden, And I'm gonna do that in front of somebody, and I'm gonna ask you what it is, and you can't laugh, and you're gonna have to say
okay.
I don't know. So we'll go to the Fine Arts Center. And I think it will be.
I think they call that the straight man. You want me to be the straight? Yeah, I'm gonna be the straight man. Is that, we'll make it work.
Yeah, and you're gonna look like God. That hurt. Why did you do that? And then I'll do the Pokemon thing, and then I'm gonna make sure you have a card so you can pull it out of your pocket and say we're everywhere. I think that would be great. So if you listen to Scarycast tonight, everybody knows the joke. But it was good, and that's this year's joke, selling caricatures. So don't anybody mess with me. It's good fun. And people did enjoy it. It made
sounds
it around,
good.
So I was really glad. Anyway.
Sounds good, sounds good.
For several months now, and I found out that you are well-versed on a lot of things that go on in the world that we would call pop culture. And what I call that is you are a futurist. Lofty title, but it means you keep up with things and you have an idea of what's going on and you kind of see the direction of technology, current events, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Sunday night, when I got back to the house, I was dead tired from the Charlotte Comic Con. But actually on the way back, I was checking my news stories on my phone. And I saw that a 150-foot asteroid came within 100,000 miles of Earth. And now, after doing a little bit of research, I mean, we know that the moon's a quarter of a million miles away, and 100,000 miles is really, really close. Now, I believe in 2012, a solar flare, a coronal mass injection, actually, I apologize, been a long day.
Right.
Dealing with Jack over in Canada, but a CME, coronal mass injection. Almost, if we had been 12 hours different in the Earth's orbit, a CME the size of the Carrington event would have blown through the Earth and would have destroyed the power grid. Civilization as we know it would be almost over by now. And we were like 8-9 hours in Earth's orbit. Had it been just a little bit different, it would have the proverbial shit would have hit the fan. And you know...
Mm-hmm.
I'll say this, that I did some research, and I sent you some of the research, and here's what I found out. In 1908, in Tunguska, the meteor that came blowing through Russia, let me find where it is. First of all, it was about three or four times the size of the Tunguska meteor. And it destroyed everything in Russia for miles upon miles when that thing entered the atmosphere and exploded. Now, 150 feet across, blowing in at about 22,000 miles an hour. Now, of course, I was talking to Jay Seals. Jay said, well, John, you know that the atmosphere would slow it down. Well, okay, atmosphere might slow it down to 8,000 feet per second rather than 22,000 feet per second. And Jay made a good point. I like this, and I was going to bring it up to him, and I'll bring up some more good stuff when we have Jay with us soon. But he said, well, you know, John, the Earth is 75% water. I said, well, 66% water, but let's not quibble. I said, and so we know what you have told me, and this is a fact, that there was a two-thirds chance that this meteor, if it had hit the Earth, would have gone into the ocean. Now, if it had gone into the Pacific Ocean, you would have had a tsunami that would have destroyed the entire Pacific Rim, including South America, including Mexico, the coast of Mexico, the coast of the United States, Canada, and Alaska. Had it gone into the Atlantic Ocean, that tsunami would have destroyed the east coast of America, the east coast of South America, the western coast of Africa, and about two-thirds of Europe, because Europe in general is fairly flat. You know, it's got the Alps, and it's, you know, you get the Ural Mountains over there near, you know, past Moscow. But Europe's fairly flat. I mean, God, you look at a tsunami that's 25 feet high, that's going to eat Finland up. That will eat it up. I mean, it'll be just, you know, there will be millions of people that are gone on Iceland, oh my Lord, except up in the mountains where nobody lives, Greenland. Had the thing hit, had a meteor this size hit Antarctica, oh my goodness!
Well, I know in 2009 there were 2009 there was the one in Indonesia too, and that was that impact. I remember reading about that and seeing all the debris that was going on over there, because that just leveled everything around it. It was just it change the whole structure of the land around that whole area. You just should see. You could just see the cracks and divots. And I mean, we're looking at all these anticipated earthquakes and everything on the West Coast. All I can think about is if the tsunami doesn't end up destroying, you know, wasn't a full destruction immediately, then you have all of the impact that then the residual force of all that of either the water or the impact of the debris still falling, or if it's breaking up in the atmosphere and other things are falling, it's just doing massive amount of damage, because the whole stone's not going to fall in one piece anyways. You have debris that's going in all directions, and it's breaking up in the atmosphere as it is. So,
well, we hope, but we don't know.
I mean,
they can say, well, yes, maybe, but they don't know what a rock that big had. What would happen if the thing
right.
5 feet across. That's 110 yards. That's a short par 3 on the golf course. That would just, you know, that kind of tsunami. And as I said, if it had hit Antarctica, there is no telling what would happen if all that ice broke up. We don't know. I mean, you know, I know there's some readings, but I mean, we don't really know how much ice is there. All that stuff breaking up, and we got all that ice floating around in the ocean. I mean, shipping traffic would be stopped. That's, you know, those icebergs would be floating up toward the equator, and they're not gonna melt that quickly because it's ice. So I'm just saying that we truly dodged a bullet. And so, I guess in your experience, because you've done a little bit of research. The first thing I'll say that I want you to tell us, the first thing is the power grid goes, something like this. The power grid goes. A 20-foot tall tsunami. Okay, first of all, Myrtle Beach is where I live. A 20-foot tall wave is going to get into Conway, which is Conway's 8, maybe 12 feet above sea level, so this thing's going to get to Anner. This thing's going to get to the end of Horry County. Horry County's going to be destroyed with a 20-foot tall wave. I mean, it's just not going to happen. I mean, you know, the power grid's going to go. I mean, the power lines can't stand it. You know, they're going to be crushed. I mean, what are we going to do? Hell, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
What else is going to happen? Because you're a smart guy. You're a futurist. Well, that's why we have you on here. What else is going to happen with a 20-foot high tsunami?
I'll tell you one thing. There's, you know, we got so many great films that were coming out during 2012. But even in 2012, when all this stuff was happening and people were worried about it, the funny thing that ended up happening was everybody was saying, hey, 2012 is not actually the date everyone should be worried about. It's the end of 2014 is when a lot of these things are suspected. And now we're seeing that. I mean, this asteroid here, which I believe they have a name on it, was GE3. It's the 2018 GE3 is the one that just passed us. This one is football stadium basically. This one is going to not just cause the damage that you're seeing a lot of those terrible movie, doomsday movies where there's all the destruction and everything. It's not just that you're worried about the tsunamis and everything. But there's always, and including in those movies like 2012 and things like that, there's always the residual stuff. There's always the after effects of each one of those things. So you have the water hitting the coast and everything else. You've got all that, and then you have atmospheric change that happened because that you have all this destruction going on. You have all of these things already occurring, and then after that, that ends up affecting so much of where our the balance of where our plates are at, our fault lines, everything like that, that can also be affected and can start doing damage as well. I mean, there's so many cities on the West Coast that are basically built on giant water tables. And so, I mean, if at that point, if you have all of these things, San Bernardino County is basically on top of a giant water table. And that's inland enough. So that probably won't suffer too much damage. And I'm not a geologist by trade. I know one though. and I know that there's a lot having to do with how much underground water and how that affects and how that would, if there's so much damage coming in from the top, how that would affect it from the bottom as well and start causing things to slide and fall.
Suppose that asteroid hit in the middle of nowhere where nobody lives, mm-hmm. in between Charleston and Columbia. There are plenty of places it could hit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a problem.
Yeah.
One of the largest fault lines mm-hmm. in the world runs through Charleston Harbor. Are you aware of that?
I have not, actually. I knew about out in California. I know about my San Andreas faults and all that. But
yeah,
no,
you better.
I'm not sure about the one
check
here.
Out that fault. I mean, what is going to happen if you get something coming in that fast and it slams in about 25 miles northwest of Charleston? And I mean, mm-hmm. good Lord, what is going to happen there? We'd have a big crack. We could have, half of all that mess could float out to sea. And then it gets even worse. There was the great winter of in the 1880s. That was because mm-hmm. a volcano in Iceland spewed forth sulfur. It didn't spew forth any lava. And it got in the atmosphere.
Interesting.
And one-third of the world's population north of, in Europe and in the northern part of the United States died from hunger. Just because that volcano started spewing forth sulfur, nobody ever saw anything. You got a little hazy. But nobody realized mm-hmm. that all those sulfur particles were reflecting sunlight back. And the earth cooled for like 2 degrees for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and it was devastating. There were no crops grown in Europe. Mm-hmm. It was just an absolute disaster. There's another thing, and I don't exactly know what the cause is. I think I mentioned this to Jay. When I go down to Charleston, I look at the Battery Park, and there is a retaining mm-hmm. wall there. And the retaining wall, there's, the sea level is right up there, and it keeps the water back. But right after the Civil War, the sea had receded, sea level dropped about 12 feet, and they took that option, that opportunity, to build a retaining wall, which created the battery.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, water came back up. I mean, there, it was not that hard to get out to Fort Sumter in that island. So, I mean, yeah. When the sea level went down, we don't know exactly what happened. I mean, if someone wants to do some research, mm-hmm. call in, that's fine. But what I'm telling you
mm-hmm.
is we live in a period of the best weather ever. We have the few, right now, we've had the fewest number of disasters, weather-related. But, you know, we're fortunate. What happens when, I remember it was about 15 years ago, we had like 22 hurricanes. I mean, real hurricanes that hit the East Coast. And then the next year, we had about 20. And so no one would have ever guessed that the hurricanes would be, there would be so much activity 2 years in a row. So we've just been very fortunate. And but you know, an asteroid like that, we're toast. I'd hate to see
I do think seismic. I'm sorry, continue.
No, I would just hate to see one of those pop into the moon. Oh my gosh!
There's has to do with. Right. Oh, yeah, and it's gone. It's like that. That's just a that's rubble, which then we deal with all that coming our way. But I think
we
the,
would
a
have
big
a,
part
we would have a ring around the Earth like Saturn.
Yeah,
We would.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
I was just thinking because I know that there's the one that hit Chile. In 2.1 million years ago, because we still have that crater at the ocean floor, the asteroid that hit there. And the thing about that hit though was that they don't really have evidence that there was tsunami activity because of that crater, but it had to do with where it landed at and the seismic activity around it, what was going on with the plates and how stable everything was. Right now, where we're at and how things are so unsettled and how we are ready for a big earthquake anyways. We're already, the Earth's already kind of ready to settle. If that happened, I feel like that would be such a big impact just because it almost would be the perfect storm because of all the things that we're dealing with all the seismic activity that's happening on top of then this. You know, it would be like setting up your dominoes first and then knocking them down. It's going to be, it would be incredibly massive. I'm really happy that the one, the GE 13, what was it? GE 13, right? Was what it was called? No, GE 3. GE 3 did not.
GE 3,
GE 3 was,
And there's something else you mentioned. The first part of the year, Mount Vesuvius looked like it was going to explode over there. I mean, God, if Vesuvius goes, look what's going to happen to Italy. And then, as we know, where is the largest volcano in the world? Where is it?
You're gonna have to fill me in on that one.
It is in Yellowstone National Park.
Huh.
So what are we going to do?
That's not active, though. That's not active. That's
oh,
that's
it is. No, there are tremors all the time. It's getting worse.
Really? Really, really? How interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you don't know every. The reason I know that is because during the movie 2012 when it came out, I was checking everything. But no, Yellowstone is, if it blows. And it blows every couple hundred thousand years, and it's overdue. And let's hope that we all live another 100 years, have a great life, and see what happens. But it could just – volcanic activity. I mean, again, the great winter in the late 1880s. Mm-hmm. And then the Carrington event. The Carrington event. Mm-hmm. The coronal mass ejection, 1859.
Yeah.
The telegraph system in America, that was the first intercontinental communication mechanism. And just because the atmosphere was so electrically charged, they had fires in telegraph offices, and they could send messages with the telegraphs shut down because they could see the aurora borealis. They could see it all the way down to the equator. Now, what was interesting is I was talking yesterday to a Marine and his bride who had come down to Myrtle Beach. They were from Camp Lejeune in Jacksonville, and he talked about how he was stationed in Norway and really enjoyed seeing the aurora borealis. I said, "What you better find out, you better check that out, because that is not a great thing. That is solar activity, and that can be very problematic." So, I mean, you know, all this, you got to take the good with the bad. So, just as we look at it every day, we have asteroids that would pelt our world. We have the chance that volcanoes are going to blow. Who knows? Oh, God, what happens if we have a polar shift? Nobody knows. Nobody knows what that could do if the poles all of a sudden shifted. So,
or we go the Douglas Adams way and say that it already did. I wanted to briefly bring up, because this was a fascinating thing to me. I always assumed that CMEs and solar flares were the same thing, but they are actually very, very different. And what I discovered in doing a little bit of research was that with the coronal mass ejections, that is a very quick, very, very intense burst that is essentially the sun firing a cannon out from of just basically just this incredible, just immense explosion out into the atmosphere or into space toward us. Whereas with the solar flares, those are slowly and can over time lift up off of those are flares that lift off of the sun over time and everything. So these are very, very different things, and they are both able to be sort of judged, but not over when something might happen. You can kind of get a feel for when the sun is starting to shift or change in that way. But what they're saying is that both of these things are not able to be really seen of what the impact it's going to be and the amount it's going to be until it happens, especially with the CMEs, because it's such a quick explosion that ends up happening. And I found that absolutely fascinating. But that's what we're looking at, you know.
Something else very fascinating is the Sunday asteroid was only discovered about 10 or 11 hours before it came by. And that's not enough time to do anything.
I know there was one article that basically said the only way we can deal with this is we can't shoot them down. That's what movies want you to believe, is we'll go up there and we'll shoot it down. But that it's actually so much better if we can just discover them sooner, because then we can deal with them as they need to be dealt with. We can go up there and, you know, shoot it from space or do whatever needs to be done at that point, rather than, you know, discovering them last minute like this was. We don't have people scanning the sky. So, you know, those people sitting around, you know, just looking around, you know, watching for aliens and debris are doing more of a service if we can get more of that going and get better quality technology to deal with that, you know?
Well, you know, Dr. Peter Riley from NASA gave a talk about six, 7 years ago, and he computed, and I reread the paper today. He computed that every year there is a 12% chance of a CME hitting the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at we've averaged about every 10, 11 years, and we haven't had a big one, but we've had a small one. And so, this is a very real danger. And I know everybody's, it's like all the survivalists, now they're right. I mean, I'm sitting here with four bottles of water and a bottle of wine. I mean, I'm sorry. If we have this thing, I'm kind of done by tomorrow. after 6 days, I'm going to have water. So, I mean, this is going to be bad, and what's going to be coming out of the sink is going to be dangerous. And, I'm sorry, I'm a bad guy. I don't know exactly how to filter. Well, I do know. I mean, you boil it, but, I mean, you got to have – I guess I do have matches and some pots. But, I mean, I'm not going to fare very well, and I should do better. How about you? How would you fare if we had a CME and if the grid went down and all of a sudden the water supply is gone by tomorrow? How are you going to fare? Do you mind a personal question? You live in a nice house, and I'm sure it was built by people that understand construction, and I believe they live there. But what would you do? What would you guys do there at the house if all of a sudden, if the grid went down tonight at midnight? Tell me what you're going to do. How are you prepared?
I think one thing about that that has been more encouraging than anything else in being out here in the South is that community is so huge everywhere I've noticed. And I think that we, I think it would, I think more or less, I don't know what the physical damage would be, but I know that at least for the most part, everybody in the community would be able to band together and have built, put their resources together. So, you know, I feel like that's, because that's a huge thing, is that, you know, community resources are enormous. You know, I know Facebook's going through all of its thing right now, but I will say one of the greatest things I saw was when California was going through its fires and all that and having all kinds of problems. You can check in and let people know if you're safe or not. And that is a fantastic technology, but there's nothing like being able to just, you know, just check in with your neighbors and deal with that and have that the close connections to everybody and make sure everyone's good and that they all have resources all together. So, I mean, if nothing else, you know, make friends with your neighbors, get close to your community, because that's, you know, people having certain resources or certain knowledges is going to be what's really helpful. Like you just said, you know, I don't know if I would know how to make water, and there might be three or four people who that's all they do know, or they have hundreds of water bottles all stockpiled, and somebody else knows how to do medical stuff, and somebody else knows how to do this, somebody else has this knowledge or this ability, you know, somebody else keeps spare batteries and knows how to set up a light thing, and somebody else does this and does that. It's usually the people who band together and all have varied skills. You know, if Walking Dead has taught me anything, you know, it's put together a group of people, and that's the best way to deal with any of that. It's interesting though, because, you know, I'm sorry. Good.
No, go ahead, because I'm going to tell you a far different story from experience.
All right. Well, I was looking, because of one thing I was thinking about was, at that point, what was fascinating to me with the CMEs is, you know, we think about solar flares and we think, oh, well, you know, blackouts, things like that, we lose our power. But I think one thing that a lot of people miss with the CME specifically with these coronal mass ejections is that there's particles can actually affect the magnetic fields directly in Earth, so that you're not just having electronics you know, going out, you are having electronics actually being affected, like on each level. So you could have things literally exploding just out of nowhere, just you know, some transformer or something blowing up, not just being cut off from its, you know, cut off from its magnetism, but actually being overcharged or shifting so rapidly that it might blow up or cause, you know, it's the difference between hooking, you know, too many things in a power strip and so it shuts itself off, and then literally throwing a knife and fork in it and then touching the two metal pieces together and seeing what happens there. And so that was fascinating to me, is that we're not just looking at a situation of these things being down, all of our power being down, but actually our technological pieces being affected on, you know, in the capacity to literally exploding right in front of us. I know back, I was reading a little bit of the article you sent me, and they said that some of the people who were in the rooms with the giant computers and everything were being thrown across the room because so much energy was being pushed back into the devices that it was popping and tossing people across the room. Now, I think with our current way that we have our current setup and everything in our electronics I think it'll happen less. Hopefully there's a lot more securities in place. I'm not an electrician, so I can't say for certain, but I do know that there's a lot to be said for how the transformers are built on radio, on poles, on telephone poles and things like that. That would probably be pretty heavily affected and may cause some trouble there.
Okay. Well, here's what happened to me in Hurricane Matthew 2 years ago.
Sure.
Probably two years ago, coming up the end of September, beginning of October. Matthew decided to come inland in McClellanville, just right down there near Pawleys Island. And I heard this horrible, horrible screech, and I knew, oh, this is not good. Then all of a sudden I could not get any signal on my cell phone, and my ceiling fan started slowing down. I said, uh-oh. All right. So we all ended up coming out. There was no rain. It was just, we just knew Hurricane Matthew had come right next to us. And so it was all right. You know, I got out my grandmother's old hurricane lamps, and I had an interesting. It was not so hot, so I had the windows open. I lived in the second floor condo, had the windows open. I was able to make it through the night, and it was all right. The next day, no power. Went down, and I really couldn't move my car because I was sitting in a foot and a half of water. You don't want to crank your car in a foot and a half of water. You don't. Because I was talking with a fellow who's an auto mechanic. He said, you could get electrocuted. He said, because you do not know how things, if things are properly grounded or not. So we waited. And the next day it was all right, and I was able to get a ride, and I got some cell phone signal, got a little bit of charge, and I talked to some folks, and I was able to hitch a ride up to a buddy of mine in Myrtle Beach, and he let me spend the night, and then he hooked me up with his uncle in Myrtle's Inlet who had power. It was wonderful, and I got to thank the Everett family and Uncle Jim for their princely treatment of me during time of need. So I go back Monday morning, no power. Everything in the refrigerator is gone. And so I'll go out. I just say, well, wonder if I had any mail from any day. And my key wouldn't work. Someone had tried to break into all of the mailboxes. And they had destroyed the lock mechanisms in every one of them. So anyway, by Monday, the water had gone down. I got to Georgetown. And what was it? Tractors are, it's not Tractors Are Us. It's, what is it? Well, it's the Great Ag Supply Store. The stores are smaller. They're not as big as, Lowe's or Home Depot, but I get down there. Yeah. Supply Company.
Oh, okay.
Tractor Supply Company. Get there in Georgetown. And they had just opened. And people were scrambling like mad to get packets of Lay's potato chips and popcorn. And I picked up a couple, and somebody grabbed them out of my hand and went and checked out or gave them money. And that's when I found out that it was about survival. And so I went back, and then I was able to get back through Myrtle's Inlet and get back up to where I could stay, and all was well. And by Friday morning, the power came back on, but it was really a disaster. And I never forget having someone just rip stuff out of my hand and go purchase it. And so, and that was in Georgetown, just right south of here. Just a nice, calm little community, and nobody was in the mood for they were in survival mode. So I'm just saying, there it would have been, oh my Lord, if something really bad happened and we had no communication, we wouldn't know what to do. They couldn't even declare martial law. I mean, the police wouldn't even know what to do. So I'm just saying, from my standpoint, it was nasty, scary, and I don't want to go through it again. And I haven't done anything. I mean, maybe we need to talk about. Maybe we all need to talk about doing something. But it's scary if something like that happens. I realized I'd never be able to see my family in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. I'd never be able to get up there because, first of all, no gas pumps were working. And so it was just a mess. It was just a mess. And it's a scary thought if the power grid goes down. And then you know, you got North Korea saying how they can knock our power grid down. And let's hope our president can solve that problem. Who knows? But it's just scary. And so we're fortunate. I guess we live in there aren't that many people that are really ready for this. And people don't have time because they're working too hard to pay bills and build companies and hold down jobs and take care of families. So I think we've got a problem that we've created ourselves. What do you think?
Well, I definitely think we live in an era of information accessibility, but also information overload, where there's so much coming in on a daily basis that we don't have enough time to actually look over everything that is coming in. We have constant things that we can, you know, if you're not dealing with this issue, you're dealing with that issue, or you could spend you know, 24 hours a day just reading everything that there is to read out there. I mean, this all, everything you sent me and everything I was able to research on my own was absolutely fascinating. And I'm still even, still looking, what we information is, and awareness is definitely a huge part of our system. But I'll go back to this, and I strongly believe that, which is communities are more important than everything. And it is incredibly scary, because oftentimes you have people who are going to take advantage of other people and do things like try and break into mailboxes and do all that and not be part of that community. But I feel like if you can connect yourself to, if you can let those people sort of die away, what I've found is that, there's two types of doomsday stories. You have your Lord of the Flies, which is if you put a bunch of people in a bad situation, they're all going to turn on each other and kill each other. Or
you're right.
Yeah. Or you have your other side of it, which is that if you actually get a bunch of people together and they're in a bad situation, they'll get together and they'll work together and they'll do everything they possibly can to survive it and to come out through it. And I think that human beings have made it through a lot of really intense situations. I mean, we look through and you can see, because we have all this information, we can see what we have come through. And I guess I'll always play the optimist, one of the fascinating things I even was even acknowledging and seeing here was about the meteor thing we were just talking about, was even the effect of the residual airburst. Because I was trying to think about what I was trying to say about all the excess rocks hitting the earth as well. And one of the big things is that so much property damage was done just through airbursts. And so much of that was sort of just an effect that a lot of people were aware of what was going on, even if you weren't the impact spot. That there's still so much. As soon as it hits the atmosphere, there's everybody around. And so I think what ends up happening is that you get a lot of people all going, hey, even if we're not in the impact zone, we're all affected by it because we can see that. Like you said, your family lives a ways from you. And so if you are not, if one person is, I think we live in a time now, though, where if one side of the world is being affected, it's affecting everybody still. And we're all there to support each other.
Absolutely.
And I think that will get us through. If we keep that in mind, that we have all of those ways of, even if the communication cuts out, even if there is no social media or anything else, because there isn't and we're so used to it and we're so globally connected in our generations, it probably will be a situation where we'll be like, no, we need to reconnect then somehow. Some way, somehow, we will find a way to get to wherever impact zones are at and support and promote that. And I would hope, I know this is scary, Cass, but the way I sometimes think to that is I'm a little less scared is just if I can think that there are at least communities working together and trying to build up and not tear down and willing to help each other out.
Yeah. I mean, and let's hope. And I guess we all need to think about this and what really could happen. So and that's the whole point of this show, is to let's think about what really could happen and somehow have a plan, even if the plan is not much. At least have some kind of a plan. If you can force yourself to take time off from working. I mean, I guarantee
you know what actually has been invaluable to me. What's that?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Oh, I said, you know what has actually been invaluable to me is I had to learn first aid and CPR when I started working at the school district way back when. And keeping that and maintaining that and still learning that has been invaluable. I would say to people, if there's nothing else, learn to do something that is helpful in a crisis situation. Know how to, know how to deal with medicals, know how to start a fire using flint and tinder, know how to, learn things that are just natural skills that aren't things that we typically think of. You know, we don't have to build a whole, infrastructure again, but if you can do things that are just basic things, survival is a lot of just knowing how to survive. So survival skills, I would say, are just huge, and it's not necessarily things like I have to be able to do the whole survivor thing. Though I think that actually that show is probably more helpful than harming. You have all these people saying, well, this is what you do to do this. Now everyone knows you know, how to store water or and make it cold by burying it in the ground and doing all that and you know things like that, and it helps. It helps out to learn certain things and to sort of follow along with all of that. And to kind of, you know, as much as I'm a futurist, I would say also look in the be a pastorist. No, that's not it. be somebody who also looks at old ways of dealing with things and how to survive in traditional ways without technology.
Wow. That's good advice. And I think we all have to be careful. But I think that I think we've covered a lot of ground tonight. And I want to say thank you very much for being with us tonight. I want to have you back on. You've got some other areas of expertise that I want to tap here in a couple months. You'll be a guest at Lizard Man on the 8th, 9th, and of June. Got you coming, I guess, to the Raleigh Cosplay Expo, not this weekend, but next weekend. So we've got a lot of great things coming. We'll see you at a lot of events. And it's good to be able to chat with you tonight. So I wanted to thank you. And what have you got to, as I learned from Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling, so what have you got to plug as we enter the waning hours of our show? What have you got to plug coming up?
This weekend, actually, if anyone in the Kershaw County area or if you're interested, Sam Wright, who did the voice of the Little Mermaid, he sang, did Sebastian, the voice of Sebastian, the Little Mermaid, and he was also on Broadway as the original cast to The Lion King. He played Mufasa, as well as he's also in a lot of Broadway shows, and he is originally a Camden born and raised. He went to school here in Camden, and he will be returning back to his hometown this weekend, and they have a free event that you can find through the Camden Fine Arts Center website. So, that's I believe that if you just go to Camden Fine Arts Center, and I think that is the website for that, you can find all the information about that, get tickets for the free event to see him. I'm going to be at Lizard Man. That sounds like a lot of fun, but you can find me personally and find all my art, find all the stuff I do, get daily inspirations and tarot readings, and find other neat things over at Jack of the Magic Arts, magic with a C and a K, so MAGICK, Jack of the Magic Arts, and of course, just anywhere where Jack of the Magic Arts is at, Instagram and Facebook mostly is where you can find me, and I'm Jack Pierce, and that's what you can find out with what I'm up to.
Well, thanks a lot, and we'll have you back. We'll have you doing some co-hosting here on the show. You didn't know you were going to get put upon, but yes, you will. Yeah, all good people get put upon in my podcast, so you'll be called upon to do some co-hosting and all that. So I wanted to thank you very much.
No good deed goes unpunished, right?
That's exactly right, and I will say I will promote that this Thursday night on Comic-Con Stars, Ronald Rossman and members of the cast of Dusk will be doing a very special episode. It'll be like old-timey radio. It'll be the only time it's ever done. It will be available as an MP4 on ComicConStars.com. Of course, with Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling, one of my best friends, David Atwell, one of my very good friends, and the inimitable Greg Bo Watson, massive, massive, wonderful comic book artist. So we've got a lot of great things coming up here on ScaryCast and on Comic-Con Stars. So, again, thanks a lot, Jack. We will talk soon, and good night, everybody. We'll see you next week. It'll be a lot of fun. Good night, Jack.
Good night. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.